am talking with Tony from Zappos, and I guess we'll talk a little bit about where Tony's come from, some of his other businesses, and now he's gotten into Zappos and where it's at today. So, Tony, thanks for joining me.
No, thanks for having me.
I'm actually really interested to know, before you did Zappos, you did another company which you sold to Microsoft, right?
Yep, it was a company called Link Exchange, which I had started with college roommate back in 96, and we grew that to about 100 or so employees and then ended up selling it to Microsoft in 1998, so about 10 years ago.
And you sold that for like $200 million, right?
Microsoft bought it for, $265 million, and after that, I got together with someone I was working in the finance department there. His name's Alfred, and he and I formed a small investment fund and invested in a number of different internet companies, and Zappos just happened to be one of them. And over time, Zappos ended up being the most promising and the most fun, so I ended up joining full-time as CEO.
So we'll certainly talk about that. I'm just, if you don't mind, I'm really interested to hear some more about some of your background and what you did at your previous company, the Link Exchange company.
Sure. So at Link Exchange, I was one of the co-founders, and initially I was involved with actually doing the software programming board, and Link Exchange was basically a cooperative advertising network, and we had about a million different websites in our network, and would basically provide free advertising services for them.
Is that a business model? So it was acquired by Microsoft. Is that still around there, or is that something kind of gone away?
They acquired it for different reasons from what we wanted the company to become. And so they wanted access, because we had about a million websites in our network, they wanted access to the small businesses that were in our network, and they really used that as a way to launch their small business initiatives. And they actually weren't as interested in the network itself from an advertising point of view. Yeah. And so they actually ended up shutting down the banner advertising network part of it pretty recently, actually.
All right. And was that your company that you founded as well?
Yeah, I had started it with a college roommate.
Right. And your background, did you grow up in... I know you did stuff in the Bay Area, but now you live in Vegas. Did you grow up in the Bay Area or did you grow up somewhere else?
I grew up in the Bay Area, and then went to college on the East Coast, and then after college went back to the Bay Area, and then about 4 years ago ended up moving Zappos to Las Vegas, and so I've been living in Las Vegas for the last 4 years.
Right, okay. So after you did the Link Exchange, then you did Venture Frogs, is that right?
Yep, and that's our small investment company.
So, but I remember you saying you guys have a bar in San Francisco. Is that still there?
That was actually something that my parents ran, and so we had a building where actually Alfred, who was my partner at Venture Frogs, and he and I had started the investment company and incubator. So he and I actually lived in the top floors of that building, and downstairs we had a bar and restaurant which my parents ran, and we also had our offices for the different companies we were investing in.
I mean, so that's kind of a cool thing. So you're, 25, you've already capped out of a company, you've done pretty well. It's like, open a bar, and I guess that's cool with your parents' business then, and you've got a place to party, and then you're running a business there as well. Is that kind of the thinking from it?
Yeah, and there was also a gym in the building as well, so there were definitely days when I never left the building.
Did it work out that well in practice? Or was the bar popular?
It was great for, because it was also a movie theater, so a lot of people would, whether it's before or after the movie, stop by the bar for a drink or get something to eat at the restaurant.
And is it still running now, or did you close it?
We closed it when we moved Zappos to Vegas.
All right. So the starting of Zappos is something that's really interesting. You're doing venture frogs, so you're investing in multiple companies, is that right?
That's right. And we ended up investing in about 20 or so different companies.
So you're, okay. And so as you're going through and you're working with these 20 companies, and you mentioned, and I read this about you as well, that Zappos was the one that seemed the most fun and the most lucrative, and so that's the one you went for, is that right?
Yep, that's the one I decided to eventually join full-time.
Was that the plan from the beginning when you're investing in all the companies?
No, we didn't really have a plan. It was more initially just thought it would be fun being involved in a lot of different companies. But what I found was that I really miss actually being part of the creative process and helping grow a company. Whereas when you invest in companies, you really put in the money and then might occasionally be there as an advisor, but you're not really involved in the day to day. And I found that I really missed that.
So what are the other 20 companies, the other 19 companies, what happened to those?
Some of them were acquired. For example, Mungo Music was acquired by Microsoft. Some of them went public. Ask Jeeves was one of the companies we invested in, and some are still going along. Like we're involved with OpenTable, for example.
Right. Yeah, that's a good dumping. So you've had your time in venture capitalist. It looks like you've done pretty well as a VC as well.
Well, it was definitely an experience, but I definitely prefer just being actually inside a company as opposed to just investing.
So would you say when, let's say Zappos at some point, some sort of event happens where you move on or it's acquired or something like that, would you do another company again after Zappos if you want to be an entrepreneur?
Well, we're really thinking that we're at the very beginning of what's possible for Zappos, and you know, hopefully we'll be able to create something that not just me, but everyone Zappos can really view as this is the place they want to be for the long term. And so it's a little different from you know the other experiences that I've had in the past, and that we're really trying to build a long-term standalone company.
Right. Fair enough. And so how did that work? I mean, you're sitting there as a VC and investing in these companies, and then Zappos is taking off. I mean, you're the investor. And so how does that work when you say, well, actually, I'd like to come in and run it?
I don't think there was really, there wasn't like a day where it just suddenly transitioned. It was more just over time, I just ended up spending more and more time, you know, with the company, and it wasn't something that I forced myself into. It was just something that seemed like it made sense to everyone that was involved.
Right. Your story is not dissimilar to Greg Thing's story with Jumpstart.
Oh, yeah, I don't know actually too much about Jumpstart. So he did
some more. I mean, Greg was. They had some success with Crushlink, and that made him a bunch of money. And so they thought, well, let's go out and we'll incubate a bunch of companies at the same time. So they're incubating like 10 or so companies. I think High Five was one of them that passed through their incubation. Although they didn't start it, they helped get the viral and all that sort of stuff working for it. And so they had all these companies running all at the same time. They got found that they got very scattered and weren't necessarily doing a very good job running them. All they had a lack of focus. And one of the companies was just really taking off, and it seemed to be the one that was the most interesting. So they basically wound down all the others and weren't focused all the time on tech.
Oh, great.
So I find that that's an interesting analogy. You seem like you've done something along the same line.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So Zappos took off. Do you want to tell us a little bit about how it got started? I've read some of the things with some emails that got sent. I was leaving a voicemail for you saying, what can I do with shoes? And you're like, you're crazy, you don't know anything about shoes. But you went and did it anyway.
Yeah, this was back in 1999, and you know there were all sorts of different internet companies being started back then. And you know, to me, shoes didn't sound like a great idea at the time. But learned as part of that voicemail that in the U.S. it was a $40 billion market, and 5% or $2 billion was being done by paper mail order catalogs. So you know, in my mind, even though I personally at the time didn't think I would buy shoes online, it definitely seemed like the web would at least be as big as paper mail order catalogs. So that's kind of what got us interested initially. And then over time, you know, customers found that it actually was very easy to purchase from us, and we started adding more and more customer-friendly services, for example, free shipping, booked ways, and that really takes a lot of the risk out of buying shoes online. And we also, over time, started extending our return policies from 30 days to 60 days to 90 days, and today it's actually 365 days. And so all this stuff was stuff that we hadn't really planned from the beginning, but over time we just found that as we put more and more into the customer experience, that really helped fuel our growth and repeat customers and word of mouth. And so that's pretty much how we started with basically zero in sales in 1999, and this year, 2008, we're on track to do a little over $1 billion in gross merchandise sales, and that's really
driven. $1 billion this year. That's incredible. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, and that's mostly been driven by repeat customers and word of mouth, and so it's kind of become this cycle now where the more we grow, the more we're able to put into the customer experience, and the more we put into the customer experience and customer service, the more word of mouth happens, and we just have to continue to grow that way.
So you're really trying to tell me you're not some like Imelda Markov with a secret shoe fetish, and that's why you started that, but it's very kind of a business idea.
No, I actually used to buy one pair of shoes every 2 years until they would wear out, and then I'd go back and buy another pair.
Have you had to go back and change that now? Like, now you have to be the shoe fashion set?
No, because we really internally, long-term, we're really just thinking of the Zappos brand as really just a brand about the very best customer service, and we just happened to start out with shoes, but hopefully 10 years from now, people won't even realize we started out selling shoes online, and we've even had customers email us and ask us, will we please start an airline or run the IRS, and we're not going to do either of those things this year, but 20 or 30 years from now, I wouldn't rule out a Zappos Airlines, because really just want the Zappos name to be about the very best experience.
I want to talk about that, because you've raised a really interesting thing. But before we go down that path, if you don't mind, I'd like just to learn a little bit more about how you got started.
Sure.
So it did actually start as an investment. Were you the only funder, or were there other investors in it as well?
There are some friends and family. The founder's name is Nick, and so Nick had raised a little bit of money from friends and family, but Venture Frogs was the first significant investor.
And how long was he going on his own before you came in and started running it?
We originally got involved about 2 months after it started, and then probably over the course of the next year or so, there wasn't kind of a sudden day where everything transitioned. I just ended up spending more and more time with the company, and then we ran the company together as co-CEOs for a while, and then I think it was about 5 years ago when we both decided that it made more sense for me to be CEO, and so he could work on other parts of the company, and he actually ended up leaving the company about 2 years ago to start another company.
Oh, really? So he's a serial entrepreneur?
Yep.
Well, he's done pretty well setting up, as I say.
Yeah, and he's now involved with a company that's involved with the mixed martial arts category, so I think that's really exciting as well.
so Zappos did originally start in the Bay Area, didn't it?
Yeah, it did, in San Francisco.
So what prompted you to move out to Vegas?
Well, our fastest growing department was our, what we call it, our customer loyalty team. It's our call center. And in San Francisco, it's really hard finding people that want to do that as a career. Whereas Vegas is a 24/7 city. We run our call center 24/7. And, you know, it's much more affordable than San Francisco. So people can actually do customer service as a career.
All right. And so given that a company manager is about service, that's well with the direction of the company.
Yeah, and we didn't want to just open up a call center and keep our headquarters in San Francisco because, you know, if really our brand is going to be about the third about customer service, then customer service needs to be the entire company, not just a department, and we all need to be together to, you know, where the customer service is actually happening.
Hmm. So how do you run things internally? It's one thing to say, like, we're a customer service company and that's where we're focused, but how are you doing things internally that makes that work? I mean, do you meet daily with all of the top customer service managers? Are you reviewing problems? What kind of things do you have in place to make sure that actually is reality every day?
Well, there's a number of different things. You know, so some of it is our policies, which I talk about. Some of it is just showing that we want to actually talk to our customers. On most websites, it's pretty hard to find, you know, contact information, let alone a phone number, whereas our 1-800 number is on the top of every single page of our website. And then the other thing is we run our call center pretty differently from most call centers. Most call centers have this concept of, I think they call it average handle time, which basically measures how many customers each rep can talk to in a day, which translates into basically how quickly can you get a customer off the phone, and we don't really view that as good customer service. So we actually don't measure call time. All we care about is if the rep went above and beyond for the customer. And an example of that is, you know, if a customer is calling us looking for a specific pair of shoes, and let's say we're out of their size, we'll actually look on at least 3 other competitor websites. If we find it there, then direct the customer to the competitor. And yes, we'll lose that sale, but really we think that's better customer service. And that's what we care about, is just making sure that every interaction we have with a customer, they walk away saying, wow, that was the best customer service ever. And then I guess the other thing is that the number one thing we focus on as a company is actually company culture. And so we believe that if we get the culture right, then most of the other stuff, like great customer service, will just happen on its own. So I don't need to personally be reviewing all the customer issues. We just need to make sure that we hire people that are customer service focused and believe in the company culture and trust that they will take care of the customers.
How did that work in reality, though? Like, give me an example. I mean, you must know that the traditions of Costco will take, like, almost any kind of return. You can take almost anything back and return things that you didn't even buy at Costco.
Yeah.
And so that can end up costing them a lot of money. How do you handle extreme situations where you've got extreme customers coming in trying to take advantage of you in the way some people do sometimes with Costco? How do you handle that sort of stuff?
Yeah, so if there are customers that are clearly abusing our policies, then we'll call up the customer, let them know that, for example, if they return shoes, the shoes need to be in new condition. They can't have gone hiking in them or anything like that. And then if it happens repeatedly, then we, you know, those situations, then we'll just shut off the customer's account.
Because, like, Google has this policy of do no evil, which I think they try pretty hard to meet that, but even still, just people would jump up and down and criticize them and say, well, they say they do no evil, but, you know, what's going on in China? You know, anyone whose business is dependent on any kind of SEO and loses their ranking gets upset about that. You and I would probably agree on the editorial stuff behind that, but a lot of people go and say, well, they try to say they're not evil, but they're not. Do you think that's going to be the case with your service focus?
We're not trying to be everything to all customers. For example, we want customers to come to us for, you know, the best service and the best selection, but you know, there are plenty of customers out there that really are just looking for the lowest price, and we're not going to make those customers happy because we don't offer coupons or blanket promotions or anything like that. And so, you know, for us, we're
going to try to compete on price.
No, definitely not on price. We want customers who value better service and are willing to, you know, pay a little more for better service. And then for customers that don't value better service, then, you know, their needs are probably better met by another website, but not from Zappos.
And so you gain that. And for you, that better service then ends up leading to higher levels of trust, so that when someone comes to you and wants to order something and you don't have it, then you can refer them somewhere else. That increases trust with you, and therefore they'll likely come back and buy the next set of shoes and you trust for that least price, first, and you'll get that next sale and then can justify a higher margin in it.
Right.
Now, something that's fascinating for me is a lot of companies, and I mean, when you worked in the Link Exchange company, were you doing any kind of advertising, split testing, knowing metrics, that kind of stuff, or was it just primarily Link Exchange?
The way the network worked was that every website that wanted to participate would put a little bit of code that we provided them onto their web pages, and once they put that on, then ads would start displaying. And for every 2 ads that they showed, they would earn 1 credit, and that credit would allow them to be advertised for free elsewhere on the network. And so, for example, if on a given day, we were displaying, say, 10 million ads across the network, 5 million of those would be used to advertise our members, and we would have an extra inventory of 5 million ads, which we would then turn around and sell to companies like Toyota, for example. And so for Toyota, it was a great way to reach a mass audience on a million websites all over the web. And for our members, it was a great way to get free advertising because it was supported by Toyota.
Have you used any concept from that business in Buffers, or is it totally unrelated?
It's pretty unrelated. I guess the only concept that really carried over was probably just that, at Link Exchange, we cared about customer service a lot and made sure we staffed that up appropriately, whereas at Zappos, it's not just caring about it a lot, it's actually making that what we want our brand to be about. So we've kind of taken that customer service concept to the next level.
Okay, because the reason I ask them is direct response is a pretty foundational concept on the internet. Being, like you said yourself, you look at the companies doing shoes by mail order on offline, and therefore extrapolate data back to online. And so a lot of direct response concepts are applied where then we split testing and optimization, and being able to pay a certain amount for a customer and drive a certain model, a certain amount of advertising, all that sort of thing. For some of the reading I was doing about your company, you for the last couple of years, I guess maybe this has changed now, but you were keeping things more or less break even. And what I don't understand is how were you acquiring customers, and how did this, was it just this relentless focus on service about your customers? I hear companies talk about that sort of thing, but then they're often the ones with no customers, where people very clearly a strong exception. So what am I missing?
Yeah, well, so when new customers register, we ask them where they heard of Zappos, and a big portion of it is some sort of word of mouth, whether it's friends or your daughter or mother or whatever, and so that is something that we look at. And then the other thing we look at is our repeat customer numbers and making sure that our repeat customers do come back over and over again, and not only do they come back, but they end up purchasing from us more and more often. And so those numbers have gone up as well, and so we look at both those numbers and are always trying to think of ways of improving those numbers. So basically always comes down to the same thing: how do we make the customer experience better?
But at the end of the day, it's shoes. It's shoes that they can buy at a store in a mall. What is it that, if you're still getting those kinds of numbers from effectively referrals, there's something motivating people to do all those referrals. If they are buying, we consider it is more or less a commodity, it's shoes.
Actually, the initial reason a lot of customers first try us out is because of our selection. We have a much, much larger selection than you're able to find in any brick-and-mortar store. Our warehouse is actually the size of 17 football fields, and now there's a little...
football fields? You have one warehouse that's that big?
It's actually two warehouses, but combined right across the street from each other, and combined it's the size of 17 football fields. And it's a little over 4 million items in there, so there's just simply no way for any brick-and-mortar store to carry a selection at large. We work with over 1,500 different brands, and you'll find, even for any specific brand, you'll find more styles available on Zappos.com than you would even in the brand's own kind of concept stores.
So when people are saying, like a daughter saying to another, you've got to go and buy shoes from Zappos, she's saying, Mom, these guys have more shoes than anyone else does, and they really take care of me, so you should go and buy it. Would that be the two things she's telling Mother?
That's part of it. And, a lot of women especially like to order 10 different shoes, and we actually do a surprise upgrade to almost all of our customers overnight. And then so they get them the next day, and then they can try it on in the comfort of their living room with 10 different outfits and then send back the ones that they don't like. And so that's something that you can't really do in a brick-and-mortar store.
Oh, okay. So what percentage of shoes are returned?
It really varies by brand. So some brands, the return rate might be 20%. Other brands, it might be 40%. Some of it has to do with fit issues, and some of it has to do with how expensive the shoes are. So more expensive shoes are more likely to be returned. And during the winter, for example, slippers are less likely to be returned because there aren't as many fit issues with that.
So you actually build your model around being able to take those returns and get them back in stock and then get them out again without problem?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, if a customer isn't sure if they're a size 8.5 or 9 for a particular brand, we will encourage the customer to order both, and then whichever one doesn't fit, just send them back, and it's free shipping in both directions. So it's very easy and risk-free for the customer.
I've never heard that before, because normally in most direct response businesses that I've worked with, it's you get returns, so they're ones that you keep out back, and then you get every so often you'll go through and you'll sell those as like an aged stock or return stock. You can put them straight back, because I guess that's what happens in shoe stores anyway. Never buy because it's never been tried on. Someone's probably tried them on, so you can take those returns and just send them straight back up again.
Yeah, so it's exactly like what happens in a regular shoe store. People try it on, and then whatever doesn't fit goes back into the stock room, except our stock room happens to be our warehouse.
So that point right there, based around fanatical service and being able to return shoes like that, was that your breakthrough that made the company work?
I don't think it was any one thing. That was definitely something that was, at the time when we first introduced it, that was pretty revolutionary. But definitely, that's just one small part of it. And there's just, I think it's really just a combination of a lot of small things. If you call us, you're going to get people that aren't reading from scripts that really are there, and you can feel that our reps actually want to help you with whatever help you need. Some people call us because they're going to a wedding for the weekend, and they just want some shopping advice, for example. And whatever the customer needs help with, we'll definitely be there to help them.
What percentage do you get of people calling you versus just orders on the site?
In terms of the number of orders placed, it's roughly 5 or 6% of orders are placed through the phone, but most of the phone calls are actually not customers placing orders right then. What we found is actually, on average, every customer will contact us at least once sometime in their lifetime, and it could be they just want shopping advice, but then they'll purchase themselves on the web later, or it could be maybe it's their first time going through the return process and they didn't realize that it's free shipping both ways, and so we help show them how easy it is to go to our website and print out the free return label and just ship it back to us. So, right now we get about 5,000 phone calls a day, and so we have a lot of interaction with our customers, and that's also where we get a lot of our suggestions for improving our services, just by talking to our customers every day.
All right. Do you ever take the manual phone yourself? Do you ever get on the phone line yourself and take customer calls?
Oh, yeah. It's not just me, actually. Everyone that's hired in our offices here in Las Vegas, when they're first hired, actually go through a 4-week training program where we go over company history, the importance of customer service, focus on company culture, and how to use the customer service tools. And they're actually on the phone for a week taking calls from customers and helping customers out. And then we'll send it to our warehouse in Kentucky, where they'll do all the different warehouse functions, picking, packing, shipping, receiving, and so on. And then so then it's a total of 5 weeks, and then they start their job as a lawyer, accountant, or whatever they were actually hired for.
Yeah,
I mean, customer service needs to be the entire company, and we believe very strongly in that. And so if there's someone, a software engineer, that doesn't make it through that program, then we won't end up hiring them. And so it really gets everyone on the same page in terms of our culture and our customer service focus, and that's why we do it. And the other nice thing is, during our busy season in Q4, then anyone from any department can jump on the phones, and they do as well.
Also, if you're running out of if you're getting overwhelmed with calls, you've got the layers and the programs on there potentially taking customer calls as well, and
yep.
kind of like retraining them as well.
Yep.
I mean, how did you learn the business of the call center stuff? Did you guys just evolve? Did you hire outside consultants? Did you bring in people to help you, or did it just work out as you went along?
We just kind of worked it out as we went along, and all our software for the call center is built in-house off of our own software. So really, it's been a constant evolution, and we were actually adding features on an almost daily basis, just based on feedback from our reps and from our customers as well.
And so the name Zappos you picked also because your direction, it sounds like it's targeting the direction that Amazon is. Is that a fair summary?
I think people like to compare us with Amazon, but we really don't think of them as competition because Amazon's really about trying to be the low price value leader. So, just the fact that we're in multiple categories, we're actually now selling handbags and apparel, even electronics and cookware. It's true that Amazon's in multiple categories and we're expanding in multiple categories, but that's kind of like saying, just because Walmart will sell multiple categories and Nordstrom sells multiple categories, no one makes a comparison at Nordstrom's anything like Walmart.
It's just on the internet. Everybody becomes a commodity, and yet you're going in the reverse direction. I mean, it's so easy to price shop online. But you're saying it's more important to have that strong relationship, strong trust with the customer, and that's what will get you through these other categories.
Yeah, and that's why we don't want to compete on price. And if a customer wants this job somewhere else because they have a lower price, then they're not the right customer for us.
So, because it's not going to work with every single product in every category either. There's going to be some that will work and some that won't work. Or do you believe it will work with every single product?
It probably won't work with every single product category, but it's the ones that it doesn't work in, which is probably won't get into those categories.
So, I mean, does that mean you end up more of a Saks Fifth Avenue type company than a Walmart carrying everything, or do you carry higher, more expensive versions of stuff like Walmart might, just for the bigger range and with a better setup?
We actually, for shoes, for example, we have $40 shoes and we have $2,000 shoes, so we're not trying to cater to just a high-end customer. Really, what we're relying on is that over time, as our business grows through word of mouth and repeat customers, that we're really funding this high level of service by not having to spend that much money on advertising, whereas I think a lot of companies spend a lot of money on advertising to keep trying to get new customers, whereas we are basically taking a lot of the money that we would have spent on paid advertising and instead putting that back into the customer experience, whether that's out of our shipping costs or running our warehouse 24/7 or running our call center 24/7.
Yeah, I got to tell you, if you'd come to me and asked me 10 years ago if this would work, I'd be telling you absolutely crazy and you shouldn't do it.
Yeah, I would have said the same thing.
I mean, customer acquisition is everything, and you've done it the exact reverse way and made that work incredibly well. So, something. Congratulations.
There's still a lot of work to do, but we're pretty happy with the growth we've had so far.
All What are you going to do about, or what are you doing about international? Do you actually know where I'm located right now?
Are you in Australia, or?
No.
I actually don't know where you are.
I'm in Korea. I'm in the Dominican Republic.
Oh, okay. That sounds like a nice place to be. But,
taking care of the sun and the beach and stuff.
Yeah.
I actually ordered some Zappa shoes about a year or two ago, and I got some that fit and some that didn't fit. And for me ordering, when it comes through international, I have a U.S. shipping address. I have to pay for them to be shipped over and then have to pay customs duty on them. So when I've now still got these shoes that are brand new that I've kept here for maybe 2 years now that don't fit. If I have to ship them back, then I've got to go and pay shipping from Caribbean to get them back, and so it kind of just doesn't work. It seems like that's I'm an unsolvable customer for that sort of stuff. Does that sound correct, or do you have ways you can work with a couple of me?
Well, long term, we definitely plan on being in different countries, but for now, we're really focused on just North America, and the reason for that is because we have so much other opportunities here in terms of other product categories, and you know, a lot of people in the United States still haven't even heard of Zappos if you pick a random person off the street. So you know, rather than spread ourselves too thin by trying to be in a number of countries at this stage of the company's growth, we really have just decided to just focus on North America and try to do the best possible job we can in North America. And then once we have that done, then we'll start expanding into other countries.
Yeah, fair enough. That makes sense. So how do you acquire customers now? Is it just through referrals? Are you doing any kind of viral marketing or any kind of affiliate program or media buying or anything at all? Or do you do none of that and you just focus on word of mouth?
No, we do have we do some paid advertising. Most of our paid advertising dollars are spent online. The top two places we spend are keywords, like buying keywords off of Google, for example. And we also have an affiliate program, and so those definitely drive customers as well. And our philosophy about those is basically if we'll spend whatever money. We don't really have a budget so much. We think of it more in terms of a ratio. And there's some ratio where, you know, for every $1 we spend in advertising, if you get so many dollars in sales, then it's going to pay for itself on the first order. So might as well spend as much money there as we can. But the problem is there's actually a limit as to how much money we can spend that still meets that criteria. And so that's why we decided we really want to focus on trying to drive the word of mouth customers.
So, I mean, are you doing like a lot of testing and optimizing landing pages and split testing and, email sign-ups and sending them updates and convincing them to buy and that kind of stuff? Or is that sort of a small part of the business and the other stuff more focused?
Yeah, we do a little bit of that, and we'll also measure, for example, different keywords will have different ROIs associated with them, and so we'll look at that as well. But really the main focus of the company has been and will continue to be on what can we do to make the customer service better, what can we do to make the customer experience better.
The value high so the customers are happy, so they'll come back and buy lots more really, really, really good shoes.
Yep. And then over time, customers will slowly learn that we also sell clothing or handbags or you know other product categories. So that'll take some time as well for our customers to think of us beyond just shoes.
The reason I keep asking about the customer acquisition part is a lot of the guys on my list are guys that are focused on delivering customers. So they're CPA traffic networks or big website publishers are looking for advertising and all that kind of stuff. And so you're actually, if you were spending time in that area, that would be a fit for you.
Yeah, and anyone that is interested in becoming an affiliate of ours, we actually have an account on Commission Junction, and basically anyone can sign up for our program as long as it's an appropriate fit for, depending on what their website is about, but usually, we actually have a lot of affiliates that just signed up on their own, and they're driving traffic towards us and making whatever amount of money they're making.
Right. Is that a big channel for you, or is that a really small one?
In terms of paid advertising dollars, the top two are keywords, bidding on our end, and affiliate program. So, for any one individual affiliate, it can be a pretty significant source of revenue if it's just, 1 or 2 person operation. But in terms of our overall, given that we're going to do over $1 billion in gross merchandise sales this year, we're really focusing much more on repeat customers and word of mouth.
Yeah, fair enough. One of the things that some of the guys in companies like yours try to do is you get really high payouts. So like the affiliate program might be a $300 payout for a new customer, which they might lose money on first pre-sale, but when they have, like you have a fanatical customer service, they're able to come back in and still afford to make that work because they make it up over time. Do you have those kinds of aggressive payouts or are they smaller?
We just pay a straight percentage. So right now our affiliate program, we pay out, I believe it's 12% of the net sales.
Is that lifetime?
It's actually for the next 90 days, I believe. So wherever sales happen within 90 days of when they first arrive the customer to our website.
Right. Okay. You mentioned about a bunch of times, you want to move beyond shoes. And obviously, with the name like Zappos, Zappato in French, it's shoes, I'm sure you know. Are you concerned that you could be limited in the consumer's mind as becoming a shoe brand? Or and where is your future direction? What are the key products you're moving towards?
Yeah, we're really we want the brand to be about service, and so it will take some time for our existing customers to start thinking of us beyond just shoes, but we're really in here for the long term. We're not trying to, you know, do anything crazy overnight, and we really believe that in the long term, the Zappos name is going to be about the best service, and people won't even remember we started out selling shoes.
So what are the areas that you're going into in the future, like, you know, clothes or handbags, or launching care?
Yeah, so we're actually already selling handbags and clothing, and we just recently added electronics and even cookware, luggage, and linens, for example. And really, we're open to experimenting with a lot of different things. We have sporting goods as well, watches, and it'll kind of just depend on what customers end up gravitating towards.
Will you still keep the Zappos name, or would you change towards a more service-oriented that name?
Right now, we're planning on just keeping with the Zappos name because it, you know, to most, unless you speak Spanish, it doesn't really mean anything to most people. So it makes you know, the direction that we can go pretty limitless.
Right. So I mean, I guess you're not going to tell me the specifics, but I mean, how profitable is the company? I know you are profitable. How it's a tough model you're running. Otis.com, for example, is doing that well. How well is it working for you?
So for the last several years, we've been running the company at close to break-even. Basically, any money we would have made, we put back into the customer experience. And so, for example, we used to ship everything ground, and then when we could afford it, we surprise upgraded people to 3 days, and then we surprise upgrade people to 2-day shipping, and now we actually surprise upgrade everyone to overnight shipping. But last year was, in 2007, was actually the first year we made a significant profit. It was roughly a 5% operating profit off of our net sales. And so we plan on continuing to both grow the company and run it profitably as well.
So you're running a monster now.
What's that?
You're running a monster now. You're like, I mean, if you're doing that sort of stuff, you're in a position to become like the next Google or something. Where are you going?
Well, we definitely think we're at the very beginning of what's possible. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, this isn't a company we're just trying to grow and sell. We definitely are thinking in the long term. And, you know, there's still a lot of work ahead for us.
And as you grow, will you do all your growth internally, or are you going to go public? Will you do grow by acquisition? Like, how do you help with the stuff?
I would say most of the growth is going to be just done internally because company culture is our number one focus, and I think it's really hard to acquire companies, you know, that have different cultures. You know, and I think there are very few companies out there that are as focused on company culture and customer service as we are.
Right. One of the things I've noticed that I've read about the company is talking about getting brands to sign up, and then finally this brand signed up. Why brands not want to sign up? Sure, you're a new distribution outlet that can give a lot of volume. Why would they not be jumping to work with you?
Well, initially, because we were a new company and they had never heard of Zappos and they didn't know what we stood for. And, you know, there's definitely a perception out there that the internet is about discounting. And so it just took some time for them to see that we aren't a discounter and that really what we pride ourselves in is customer service. And so once the brands realized that, then they were much more comfortable working with us. And you know, there definitely are other websites out there that are about discounting. And I think that's what, you know, scares a lot of brands away, because they want to protect their brand image as well and they don't want to see their product discounted on the internet.
Do you still have brands that don't want to work with you, or is that something from the past?
There's still the really high-end brands. Some of them still aren't working with us, and so it's just a process because, you know, basically when we first started, almost none of the brands would work with us, and then finally we convinced some of the $50 or $60 brands to work with us, and then once most of those were working with us, then we were able to convince the next tier, you know, the say $75 or $80 brands to work with us, and then once they were signed on, then the $100 brands. And so it's just a bit of a process where, you know, over time as people see that we are signing up higher and higher-end brands, that then, you know, the really high-end ones slowly start to developing a comfort level and working with us.
Very interesting. So for the future going forward, you mentioned you're focusing on building a great business and the company culture and that kind of stuff. I know Microsoft, when it was growing, it didn't want to go public, but in the end, there was a lot of people who did want to cash out, and they weren't forced to. Do you think you're in that sort of position as well?
Well, I think the difference is that we really try to make our company culture the thing that makes employees want to come join Zappos. And so it's a little different because I think the promise in a lot of other companies is if you join us, then one day you'll be able to cash out and be rich. And that's not our approach at all.
Right. So will Zappos continue just as a private company?
For the foreseeable future, yeah, we don't have any immediate plans to go public.
And it's just owned by a small group of investors, which include you, and that's pretty much it, is it?
Sequoia Capital is also an investor, and they got involved a few years ago.
Right. Fascinating. Let's see. I think I've asked you everything I can think of. Is there anything that you'd like to talk about which I haven't covered?
No, I think we covered a pretty good deal today.
Thank you. That was a great interview.
Sure. Thank you.